Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. It is Sabres Live, chock full of prospect talk, perhaps, and Penguins as well, and a TV schedule that has been released on the national stage, which, of course, has a trickle-down impact on us.
We should have known the TV schedule 2 days ago because we were going to spend a whole show on the Flyers yesterday. We're not going to see them on MSG this year. All three of the games are on national TV. We could have said, you know what, Flyers, here's what it is. You guys did not make the playoffs last year, probably won't make the playoffs this year. 5 years, yeah. And we're not going to see you on MSG, so we're moving on. Let's move on to Pittsburgh already, which we didn't know until this morning about the national TV schedule.
Next summer, we'll talk about what allegedly happened in the Sabres and Flyers season series.
Don't know if I'll be watching. No, I'll be watching. You know, we're always watching.
Always watching, yes.
I may be not taking the same notes that I do. Like when we do the games, I have my game sheets, first period, second period, shot attempt, side danger chance. When the game is on national TV, I usually crack a cold one on the couch and then watch it as a fan. So that's kind of what I do.
Yeah, but you're literally like, you will crack a cold one. Like that's one. You, like you, one. And maybe it's a tall boy, but like, that's it. You know, you're just like,
now, if you don't finish the glass and you keep refilling it, is this still considered one?
One to the power of, I think.
I think it could be debatable right there.
It's the smarter approach than getting the Stein, you know, like the 32-ounce draft right off the hop, because then by the time you get halfway through, it's so warm. It's like a terrible decision. Every bar you've ever been to and you get enticed like, 32-ounce draft.
That's boot when you get the boot.
Exactly.
The big boot. Oh, have you ever been, and this was a very popular thing on the patios in Quebec City, but maybe Montreal, Toronto, other places, these hourglass shape, like long glasses, and they come in the wooden like stand. Well, when you get towards the end of it and all of a sudden the air bubble hits the bottom because it's like, and then it splashes. Yeah. That means you've had too much. You got to move on.
I think a lot of local establishments have their own version of it. I believe, like, from a chain standpoint, like, doesn't the Yard House, which you see in a lot of, like, don't they have a yard of beer, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they also have those that they deliver the big thing of beer in the middle of your table, but it has a tap at the end of it, and you basically, it's like a pitcher, but it stays in a long tube in the middle of the table, and you just open it up.
Famous steins I've consumed in history most frequently were at, and you'll relate to this, Boston Pizza.
Yes.
But out in Western Canada, long before Boston Pizza ever gravitated to the East, they had $5 steins or whatever, and they were gigantic on Tuesday nights. So I watched many a hockey game in college while nursing one of those.
I thought you were going to go with, like, when you went that way, most famous or most popular.
Not so famous.
I thought, is there, like, somebody Stein, like, but then it made me think of Ben Stein, right? Win Ben Stein's money back in the days, like, that show that was the anti-Jeopardy. So that was, and then at the end, you'd go one-on-one against Ben Stein to win his money. I loved that show. I thought that was great.
Probably a more popular Stein than Gil Stein, previous NHL commissioner.
Yeah, not right. Not a name that many people will remember.
Preceded Mr. Bettman, of course.
Yeah, Penguins so are it went what it went Ziegler, Stein, Bettman.
Maybe,
but Ziegler was the one.
Where social
many
media
many
comes
years.
In handy.
Yeah, I know, and that Google machine also.
And producer Jeff, obviously. So the TV schedule, real quick, the first go-around on the national stage for Buffalo is on October 22nd. That is against Detroit. There will be a game 2 days later, also on national TV against Toronto. Then we have three in a row against Philadelphia, two of them in December, one in January, and then closing it out, January game against Carolina and a February game against Tampa. So
After the Olympic break, like when you look at national schedule for the Sabres. So, look, I mean, when I looked at it, I thought, Okay, so obviously we all want to see the Sabres in a playoff battle down the stretch, maybe in a playoff spot. But here's the thing. According to the national schedule right now, all those games will be on MSG. You'll be, if the Sabres are making a push and you're, that none of them are going to be on ESPN Plus where people are complaining, I don't have that. It's all going to be on MSG. So you'd be getting that final push, the March and April push, all the games on MSG.
And if the math is correct, 82 minus the 7 national would leave us with 75 telecasts on MSG this year. But who knows? Maybe they've got some curveballs.
They do change things up a little bit sometimes. They take one away. They readjust. Yes. We've had that. Now, if we were in a year from now, the math would be 84 minus 7 because this is the last year of 82. But in a year from now, we'll go to 84 games. Just saw an article on the Hockey News today saying season could start earlier next year with 84 games. Obviously, it's going to start a little early. Not going to play as many preseason games. And you
nothing
got
is obvious,
games.
Marty. Come on.
Well, nothing is obvious. But I would think that this season, the opening night is October 7th. Mm-hmm. Sabres do not play for a couple of days until the 9th when they have the home opener. Mm-hmm. I think in the year from now, we're seeing October 2nd, October 3rd, that will be when the season will start.
Remaining 75 non-national telecasts to be seen on MSG and the Gotham Sports app. So, as far as today's show, beyond how to view this upcoming regular season, associate producer, today only, Corey Pronman from The Athletic, because he's been feeding us information to chew on, which
lists.
You can also...
Lists.
Lists. It is list season. It's a long, long season. Interesting, because we have talked to Corey so many times over the last number of years, yeah, where Buffalo has often found themselves ranked in the top 10 in the prospect pool based on high draft picks and whatnot. This year, they're just outside of that, according to Corey. But Corey has interesting parameters when it comes to what he still deems prospects. Yes. So when evaluating organizations, what do they have? Who's most important? And maybe who's likely to step up and make an impact this year? Again, the Penguins are our team of the day. They have changed dramatically on the prospect front in recent years and still, by the way, have 12 draft picks to the Penguins over the next 2 years in the first three rounds. So twice as many as what you're, you know, expected to have. The Penguins have again, like they did this past year, have loaded up in that regard. But from a Sabre standpoint, Marty, and again, what's the criteria again? It's 22 by mid-September of this year.
Yes.
So the Sabres top prospect list, according to Corey Pronman of The Athletic, has Owen Power at number one.
Yes.
Power will turn 23 before Christmas, but he fits Pronman's criteria here. He's played over 240 NHL games, of which Corey does not care about. That's what he lays out in his rankings here. It's like, yeah, doesn't matter how many, it's age specific. So based on that, is Owen Power still the most important top prospect for the Buffalo Sabres in your opinion?
So I would have said no with all the conversations that we've had over the last few days, especially regarding Zach Benson and maybe even Yuri Kulik, and saying, look, is Tage Thompson going to be a center? Mm-hmm. But if Tage is in a center, that means Yuri Kulik's going to have to fill in some big shoes. Who's your top left wing winger? Is that going to be Benson? So based off the conversations that we've had over the last few days, my initial response was no. And then I was reminded by reading Corey Pronman's article that, you know what, like defensively, this is where the Sabres have to take a step forward. And then I'm looking at, okay, yes, Owen Power is probably the most important prospect. And I put the bunny ears, the quotation mark, because he's not a prospect. I mean, at this point, he's a veteran NHL player. I don't care what people say. Like, oh, he's still young. He's 22. It's not about your age. It's about your experience, about the pedigree and everything. Owen Power should be considered a veteran in the NHL, not a prospect. And defensively is where the biggest gains have to happen for this team. We talked Dalene and Byram. Okay, if they're going to play together, that's a top pair. The numbers were undeniable. They were top five in shot percentage, chance percentage, expected goals percentage. They were great. But who's going to support them? And power has to have the impact. Maybe playing with Michael Kesselring, new guy coming in the Peterka trade. Mm-hmm. So I will agree that now maybe I'm switching sides and, well, it's not about offense, about defense. Mm-hmm. And power needs to be the prospect with the biggest impact because that's where the biggest gains need to happen. But then you look at the list. Mertka, who was just drafted in the first round, is ahead of Benson and Kulik. So Pronman is seeing the same thing now, is that it's about the back end.
Can we stay on power for a minute?
Yes.
Just in the sense that, how do you think people view last year for Owen Power? And I don't want to just say fan specific, but lump everybody in based on the number of people that you typically listen to, seek information from, have approached you over the course of time in the arena and around town. How do you think the majority of people view Owen Power last season?
Disappointing.
Really?
I think they view it as disappointing. And the reason is that when in his first year, he had 35 points in 79 games, four goals. It took him forever for the floodgates to open. And finally they opened late in the season. But it was okay. He's young. The points are there, which is great. And he'll learn the other aspect of the game. He'll get a little tougher, a little bit more physical. He'll take ownership of the play, control the play. That's year one. Year two happened. The production wasn't the same. He dropped a little bit in production by a couple of points. Last year, the production went up a little bit. He scored more goals, 7, had more points, 40. But I think that it's past the honeymoon phase of, your production is good. What else are you doing? What else are you doing to separate yourself from the first-year player that was, pretty good? Mm-hmm. But now pretty good is not good enough. So I think a lot of people were disappointed. But if you look at the stats alone, you're thinking progression is there. 35, 33, 40, maybe next year goes to 45. I don't care if he goes to 45 or 50 next year, as long as there's an added element to his game that we haven't seen yet.
Of course. As far as statistical, your bunny ears, improvement, to me, all three of his seasons are the same.
Yeah.
If you're talking, like, seriously, it doesn't matter. He had 35 points in his first full year. He had 40 last year. That, to me, is literally no difference. That's mm-hmm. And then the focal point, even from a coach's words standpoint, has been just want him to be more assertive, make plays a little quicker. And then there's the added part, which you hear more from fans, but maybe get hinted at a little bit by those within the organization as far as like an increase in physical play, yep. Meaning embrace your size as much as possible to allow that to help you and impact the decision-making so it can happen quicker, all that stuff. But when you strip down and these are all kind of negotiable based on which sources you use to track statistics. Mm-hmm. But points aside, Owen Power, from a possession standpoint, a shot creation standpoint, he is as close to identical at even strength over the course of his 3 years. Like, we're talking insanely decimal points. Like he's basically a 51% Corsi guy at even strength. But last year...
And his point production is the same. It went from 24 to 23 to 28. That's the same thing.
So here's one thing that I appreciate and almost beg from players. Just be consistent. Right? I want consistency. I want to know what I'm getting. And I get it. It's different when you're still in the formative years because you want that progress. You want that elevation to your draft pedigree, which in Power's case is a first overall pick. But there's something to be said for consistency, but then there's the other side of it where all of a sudden, okay, many of the numbers are consistent, but he was on the ice for a lot of goals against. And it was, that was maybe a noticeable change. He was always on for a lot, and it didn't like, but he's always on for a lot for and a lot against. That's just his been his nature. And we saw it all those times early on when you get him playing with Dahlin, right? And it's like, yeah, they might be on for a bit, but they're going to outscore their opponents. And isn't that what the whole goal is? Now, maybe you
that's
want
what
that.
He did 2 years ago. That's what he did 3 years ago. But last year, not as much.
Right. But what else did we see last year? A regression in save percentage. So yeah. Sometimes you're the victim of others letting the team down also.
And it's been my song all summer long.
If sure your
goaltenders,
has.
If goaltending's better, all of a sudden it's a different look. You're not looking at that turnover. You're not looking at that rebound, the box out. You're saying, the saves are being made, and it's fine. So that is one thing that I do agree, like goaltending will help a lot for Owen Power and Dahlin and Tage Thompson and everybody. That is going to help. Now, consistency is great. I love consistency, and I'm so happy you brought that up, Duffer, because if Owen Power was a first-round pick drafted 18th overall and we were getting consistent play and it was like, okay, that's great. Like, it's a player that we can rely on. We know what we're going to get, and we can build in that consistency. Mm-hmm. The difference here is that he is a first overall pick. So some are going to say, well, you can't hold that against him. Owen Power is who he is. And he's going to, yeah, but he's also now signed a contract that is paying him almost $9 million, like over $8 million. Why? Because he was a first overall pick. Mm-hmm. And he's shown you that he can at times take his game to the next level. It just, the production's consistent. Everything else consistent, but I feel that within his game, there's a lot of inconsistencies.
If you're just joining us here on Sabres Live, we're deep diving on Corey Pronman's rankings today. And of course, this is an annual tradition for him as he goes through the entire league from 32 all the way up to 1 as far as his pipeline rankings. And he focuses on players that are 22 and under as of September 15th of this year. And it doesn't matter how many games they've played in the NHL. And that's why we're talking about Owen Power, because he's listed as number 1 in Buffalo's prospect pipeline from Corey Pronman with The Athletic. So interesting that maybe, and we have to emphasize this based on all the previous discussions about who will play with who or whom. I always mess that up. Anyway, you're looking at a Kessel ring potentially as the guy to come in and help Power live up to not only first overall pick in his draft year, but first right now in the prospect pipeline ranking, like the yes. most important prospect. And Kesselring's played 80 games less than Power in yeah. his NHL career.
He's you know the what one I mean? That's like, come in to balance it out, but okay.
It's what fascinating, if, isn't it? Like,
what if we're saying, and this is going to be interesting when camp opens up in, you know, mid-September, is what if you're looking at Power and Dahlin and Byram and Kesselring, and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, like, we're going to put that on Power's table, right? We're going to say, you're going to be top pair with Rasmus Dahlin. The production, the play, the physical aspect, the playing against the top lines, it's all going to be on your lap, but you're going to play with Dahlin, as opposed to say, we're going to bring Kesselring, and the guy's played, you know, 80 games less than you have. So I think this will be interesting. Right now, I would have Dahlin, Byram together and Power and Kesselring together, but that could very much be still being debated inside the coach's room.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on the point total. Like last year, because of a full season of Byram, we were really looking at it with intrigue in the offseason. Like, hey, like This defense corps has the possibility to do what other defense corps are not capable of, and that's have three guys at 40 points or more. And they ended up being one of the higher scoring defense corps. But that becomes slightly moot when you have the other challenges, i.e., you know, goals against, at a level that, I mean, you can't run from it. Pittsburgh is our team of the day. And it was a startling reminder today, based on their challenges in the crease last year, that the Sabres and Penguins ended up tied in goals against at 29th in the NHL.
Yeah, goaltending's a big part. But and you just, again, well, let's go back to quickly Owen Power. His first full season in the National Hockey League, which most people would have thought, hey, it's a great first season, 35 points, you know. His difference in goals for, goals against at 5-on-5 was 88 goals for when on the ice at 5-on-5 to 71 against. That's a plus 17. Then last year it dropped to plus 11. 2 years ago, plus 11. And last year, minus 5. Like, that's because the offense dried out. And is it because, well, it dried out. Dried out on the power play and you gave up too much at 5-on-5. So there was a little bit of the two of them together. But even if you say Owen Power needs to be on the ice for at least 70 goals for this year at 5-on-5. That goes back to what he did 2 years ago. That's still short of like what he did in his first year. But that to me would be like the step for him to say, I'm going to take ownership of the puck control, the puck possession and everything, especially at 5-on-5.
Can you quickly search who among defensemen was on the ice for the most goals for at even strength?
Yeah, I will do that.
Because
right now,
when you phrase it that way about, you know, being on the ice for 70 goals for, the simple math means, wow, like that's almost a goal a game. And if you minimize it against, like you're looking at, and whoever he plays with, wow, that's a really effective tandem. But because you allowed us to go down that Power Dahlin potential pairing moments ago, I instinctively would sit here and say, if those two played together all year, I would expect 100 or north of in even strength goals for.
This is so interesting now, because I didn't do this. 5-on-5 last year, the number one defenseman on the ice in goals for is Zach Werenski. I think if I say that, you would have said, yeah, that makes sense. Zach Werenski, 86 goals he was on the ice for at 5-on-5, only 64 against.
Yeah. With not elite goaltending. That's
with
pretty darn good.
With not elite goaltending, but he was, that's why he was top three in the Norris trophy voting. Mm-hmm. Number two was Bo Byram with 80 goals for on the ice at 5-on-5. And only 66 against. So there you go. Like, Bo Byram at 5-on-5 last year was number two in the league in goals being on the ice. Then after that is Thomas Harley. Erik Karlsson, Pittsburgh Penguins, team of the day. He had 77.
Yeah, but
Lane
how many
Hudson,
against?
74.
How many against for Karlsson, though?
82.
Thank
That's
you.
A big difference. Thomas Harley was 78 to 49. Imagine that. 78 to 49.
Are you kidding?
5-on-5.
Wow. That is a staggering difference.
Yeah. Like, that percentage was 61%, you know, in the league and in players that have played Jordan Spence was 65%, but he doesn't play as much. But we talked about him the other day about, you know, being
now in Ottawa.
Ottawa. But Bo Byram was number two with 80 goals at 5-on-5 on the ice in goals forward. Like, that's big.
So now that you did incredible perspective, research, context for all of the defensemen, including who we're talking
goals against now?
I was overshooting the runway, obviously, by thinking that like a Cale Makar might have been on for 100 goals for. So I'll dial it back. And if it ends, and if Power was at 70, then like, let's just continue on that and hope that maybe it's closer to 80. So it's exactly one goal a game for, and then you hope that you keep it to 60 or less. And you would hope that based on the potential balance of the defense corps, that like, that is a really, really, really promising sign based on what we know the capabilities of Dahlin and Byram are.
Yeah, but again, like when you look at Owen Power, he was 15th in the NHL from the bottom, basically, in being on the ice for most goals against at 5-on-5 in defensemen. Yeah. Alex Vlasic was number one, but and Carlson two. Sanheim was Philly, number three. You got Mike Madison, Montreal, number five. I like Madison, but he was on the ice at 5-on-5 for a lot of goals. That's why people in Montreal have been criticizing Madison. That's why Pittsburgh have criticized Carlson. Yeah. Maybe on the ice too much. That's why Power took the blunt of the criticism because
brunt.
I never know if it's blunt or brunt, like whom and whom.
No matter how many times I try to gently correct you.
I know. It rolls off much
quicker. I'm never going to get in the way of this again.
Fans, because he was the number one Sabres defenseman on the ice for most goals against at 5-on-5.
I'm never going to intervene on blunt.
Good. You should, because I think everybody in their cars are like, or at home, they're like, Marty, it's brunt.
No, it's
let me be
better.
Blunt that it is brunt. How about that?
I'm dying. Okay, very quickly, and maybe we'll get to Pittsburgh as the team of the day. They are one of the 32 member clubs, after all. Mertka.
I knew you were going to drop that in at some point today.
Mertka, Benson, Kulik, yes. Helenius, Ostlund, Wahlberg, Kleber, Sturback, Leinonen, round out Corey Pronman's top 10 in the Buffalo Sabres prospect pipeline.
I'm surprised that Mertka is at number two. The guy just got drafted, right? And it's like, okay, he's got a lot to show because a lot of the Sabres prospect have played NHL games or played AHL games. Benson, Kulik have played NHL games and are NHL regulars now. Constellanius, he's played a full season at the AHL level at 18, youngest player in the AHL, and I thought he did really well. So I was surprised that Mertka was number two. I get that maybe there's some type of players that you like or even love, the size, his ability to skate, his ability to shoot the puck from the blue line. There's a lot to love there. I was just surprised he jumped to number two in front of all the other ones.
Okay, well, I'm going to put this out there. You can answer it real quick when we come back. Is there anybody on that top 10 list that is significantly out of order, in your opinion? We'll get to that when we continue Sabres Live along with the Penguins team of the day. And, of course, today is yet another day where the Sabres are joining forces with Topps Friendly Markets to wind down summer with exciting tour stops at Topps locations. So tonight, Maple Road in Amherst. We've got Orchard Park Road in West Seneca, September 3rd. Elmwood Ave in Buffalo on September 10th. And on these nights, including tonight, from 4:30 to 7:30, spin a prize wheel, fun giveaways, enter an exclusive sweepstakes for home opener tickets and signed jerseys, and to contest your skills at the inflatable hockey shot. Visit sabres.com/tour for more details. Back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Penguins team of the day coming up here on Sabres Live. Corey Pronman's list, the prospect pipeline. Buffalo ranks 13th in his opinion in the pipeline rankings. And we talked a lot about that in the first half hour. Power at number one. And remember, this is not based on games played as a pro. This is age specific, 22 and under as of September 15th this year. The list for Buffalo: Power, Mertka, Benson, Kulik, Helenius, Ostlund, Wahlberg, Kleber, Sturback, Leinonen. Was anything significantly out of whack in your opinion, Marty Baron?
Well, I mean, I mentioned before the break, Mertka at number two was a little bit out of whack with me when you consider Benson, Kulik are NHL players and Helenius played a full year at the AHL, was a first round pick as well, a high one. So I thought that was a little out of whack. And I would have put Sturback, who's ninth on that list, a little higher, probably ahead of Kleber and Wahlberg to me. I just feel like Sturback will be a very significant piece in the future. Now, Tobias Leinonen?
Leinonen. Think of Ville Leino every time.
Yeah. Oh, I like that, Leinonen. As number 10, I haven't seen enough of Leinonen to say, will he be, like this year will be interesting. He's going to be playing in North America, Rochester or Jacksonville or whatnot. Rochester. It will be it will be interesting to see where he goes. I think I would have put Sevi Komarov in the top 10 and probably dropped Leinonen outside the top 10.
Interesting. Meaning
Sevi Komarov, not that he had the best of years last year, but he still is coming off of, you know, the year before, Defenseman of the Year, you know, everything that he did in the QMJHL. So I think I would have put Komarov in the top 10.
There's a lot on Zach Benson's plate. That's all I know.
Yes.
Based on what we've talked about and who he might play with. And Yuri Kulik as well. But I feel like it's easier to project what Yuri can be based on where he played last year, mm-hmm. who he played with. And the, you know, for Benson, it's 2 years, and I've liked his 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's just, if he's that high on the list, how big can the next step be? So we'll await with great interest.
Lot on his plate, because also he's throwing the first pitch at the Bisons game on September the 6th, Hockey Day at the ballpark. So he better be warming up right now. We don't want a disaster of a pitch. He's got to represent Western Canada and BC and well.
And Western
New York. Danny Gare well.
Okay. Penguins are the team of the day. They've missed the playoffs 3 years in a row. Interesting, and again, similar to the Sabres, in that if you backtrack the last 3 years, they had 80 points this past season, 88 prior to that, 91 the year before that. That should ring a bell, because they ended up tied with the Sabres, only 1 point behind the Florida Panthers, who not only got into the playoffs, but started their run of 3 straight trips to the Stanley Cup Finals. So again, the margin is very slim, and we're also very unaccustomed to seeing Sidney Crosby, despite his ultra high-level, consistent superstar play, miss out on the playoffs when you consider. And this, as you know, I like to re-research things when it comes to Crosby, because I think we forget some things over the course of time. Where do you think Sidney Crosby ranks in NHL playoff scoring all time?
I will say he probably ranks 7th.
You never cease to amaze how good you are at spontaneous trivia. He is tied for 5th.
Okay.
With Jaromir Jagr. But I'll anoint him 5th because of fewer games played.
Yes, points per
game. He is the only non-Oiler dynasty in NHL history to be in the top 5.
So the rest, got Wayne, Messier, Curry.
And Anderson.
And Glenn Anderson. Yep. And then you got Jagr and Crosby. But
amazing,
yes.
Isn't it? It's amazing. But you know what else is amazing?
Jagr was a Pittsburgh Penguins like dynasty when you considered Mario Yags and winning back-to-back cups. Now, Crosby's now won 3. So that's also significant. He's played in a lot of games. But yeah, I would think that for me, Sidney Crosby... And we could do an hour show just on Sid, and I know people may not like that. I mean, there's a Mount Rushmore of hockey, and Sidney Crosby is on Mount Rushmore of hockey for me, just because of how he has impacted the game, both as a person, a work ethic, an on-ice, a leadership for the NHL. International hockey has been great. But he is not a young cat. He is 38 years old now. Mm-hmm. He just turned 38 in the month of August. But his last 3 seasons were almost some of the best, most consistent hockey he's ever played. He only missed 2 games in the last 3 years. And he went 93-94 and last year 91 points. He went 33-42, 33 goals. Like, he is about as consistent and as good still as he was, you know, 10 years ago.
Another, and I love doing this kind of stuff. Now, Crosby, he's top 5 in playoff points. Among players who've played 80 playoff games or more, so like a full season worth of playoff games, he's actually 14th in points per game. This is a fascinating list.
Okay.
Gretzky, Lemieux, McDavid, Draisaitl, and like this has been on display the last 2 years. Like these two guys are so good, but they don't have the title yet. Then it's MacKinnon and Messier and Rantanen and Bossy and Curry. So the Oilers are the outliers there. The new Oilers are the outliers in that they don't have the title.
Everybody else is a winner.
But number 10 on the list, this always gives me great pride to say it again, is Gilbert Perreault. At 1.14 points per game. So he, of course, like MacKinnon and Draisaitl, did not get the cup title. Forsberg is right after Perreault. Stastny is tied with Forsberg. Kucherov is tied with Forsberg and Stastny. And Sidney Crosby is right behind them. Isn't that just an incredible list of, I mean, people that I would just always pay to watch? Like every single one of them in their own right is so unique and awesome.
And everybody does it in a different way. You mentioned McDavid and Draisaitl as being the outliers. Like they're the ones that haven't had a chance to lift the trophy in the top nine. And then Gilbert comes in at 10th. Peter Stastny has not won a Stanley Cup either, but he was obviously one of the all-time greats, right? Second to Gretzky in that era in points and everything, but he was a little older and still fantastic. But I look at Crosby and the way that he plays the game. It's not like McDavid. It's not like Draisaitl. It has a little bit more Wayne to his game than any of those guys, right? Because Sid was never the guy that's going to put a wrist shot or a slap shot and blow it by you at 100 miles an hour. But he will score on that slapper or wrister or backhand because he's smart. He reads the goaltender, controls the play, hangs on the assist, right? The playmaking, the assist. I feel like Sid is the closest to Wayne Gretzky in all of those guys in the way that he plays the game now. 30 years later, we're talking about Wayne in the 80s and 90s and Crosby in the 2010-2020s.
Penguins, of course, with Crosby winning the Conn Smythe twice, won the Cups in 16 and 17 against San Jose and Nashville. And that alone is just such an interesting era to revisit based on the fact we're currently living in a world where the Panthers have won back-to-back and the Penguins then winning back-to-back. Just to think that Nashville was two wins away from the Stanley Cup. The series was even at two games apiece. It's crazy, man, thinking
just
about
to
it.
Just think that Pittsburgh beat San Jose and Nashville to win those Cups. And all three of those teams now, obviously it's a changing in era, but San Jose and Nashville, they were at the bottom of the league and Pittsburgh was actually
Nashville never was, man. Like they were so good. They were full value for getting there because they had been one of the most consistent teams in the league, always rising for about 12 straight years. So they had their moment. They got there to 2-2 in the Stanley Cup final. Then they got shut out in each of games 5 and 6 and the Penguins win the cup. Anyway, all that aside, that's now way back in the rear view for Pittsburgh. And there's not a lot, I don't think, in our exercise of team of the day worth really diving into here on the Penguins, other than the fact that they've missed three in a row. Most people would expect they're going to miss four in a row. They've got a new coach in Dan Muse. They've got half the team that's going to be UFAs at the end of the season. They still have Tristan Jarry as a goaltender, which seems crazy, not disrespectful to Tristan based on what he's been able to do in the NHL. It's just because last year got so bad for the Penguins goaltending. And he does have three more years to go in his deal. So, like, what's the big story? What's the expectation for Pittsburgh with Dan Muse as a first-time head coach? He's been an assistant, Nashville, New York Rangers, 43 years of old, just north of Crosby. And is it Malkin's swan song? Like, that's, you know, kind of the storylines, right, in a nutshell.
I'll answer the Malkin question first because the Pittsburgh Penguins will have 10 unrestricted free agents at the end of this season, and Evgeny Malkin is one of them. I think this is Malkin's last season with the Pittsburgh Penguins and most likely will not finish the year. I think Malkin gets traded before or at the deadline. Crosby will stay. Crosby will be a Pittsburgh Penguins for life, but Malkin will move on, being that he's a UFA. And, you know, they got a ton of cap space, but it feels like Cal Dubas, the GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins, has a plan, but I don't know what that plan is because he's like, we're not going to be aggressive in free agency. Doesn't seem like they've drafted all that well. They've not made aggressive trades. They re-signed, you know, Letang and Malkin and Crosby, and they acquired Carlson, and it's not gone the right way. So I don't know what the plan is, but I can tell you that I would entertain Malkin and be able to have those conversations throughout the year to make sure that you maximize that return. That's the number one thing. Dan Muse, head coach. He's never been a head coach in professional hockey. I'll repeat that. He's never been a head coach in professional hockey. He's a head coach with the Chicago Steel of the USHL. Was it the head coach at the NTDP, the National Development Training Program, mostly coaching 17 and 18 years old. He was an assistant coach with the Nashville Predators under Peter Laviolette and the New York Rangers under Peter Laviolette, but never a head coach in pro hockey. This is a big question mark when it comes to Dan Muse. It was interesting that they went that way because they had
all
these
straight up trade for Mike Sullivan. That's it. Well,
yeah, exactly. New York, like a head coach for an assistant coach will make it work. Both will be head coach, but there was big names being rumored in Pittsburgh and they went with Dan Muse. So that was a very surprising choice by Cal Dubas and the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Malkin goes to the Sabres at the deadline.
I'm not going to say no.
Okay. And then who plays more in goal for them this year? Tristan Jarry or Artur Shelovs?
Artur Shelovs.
All right. We're back after this with an interesting wrinkle on birthdays as we continue on Sabres Live right after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Up to LaFontaine. He gets tripped up. Gets it to May and over the line. Here's May going in on goal. He shoots. He scores!
Well, I cried this morning listening to that, knowing that it could tie in with today's show. That, of course, from April 24th, 1993. You ever wonder who was the first star of that game?
I was going to say RJ.
On the game sheet, it says Brad May.
Yes.
Do you know who the second star was?
I'm going to say not Ray Bourque.
Adam Oates. Adam Oates, who turns 63 today. Happy birthday, Adam Oates. Thank you for being on the right side of history.
Oh.
Sabres history, that is. But I, you know, Adam Oates, Hall of Famer, I mean, the numbers are insane. I actually was a little surprised that he's 63. Like, for some reason, I was still thinking younger.
I mean, he did play a long time, and he was consistent. And as a playmaker, a passer, go Google pictures of him. He had the shortest blade possible on his stick because he was all a stick handling and about the passing. And obviously he was with the Washington Capitals in 98 when they beat the Sabres in the conference finals, him and Joe Junot and Chris Simon and Olaf Kolzig. But Adam Oates, what a player, what a brain, a hockey brainiac, was so fun to watch. So happy birthday.
Happy birthday, indeed. And as far as what's coming up, are you excited?
Oh, by the way, just want to let you know, that call by RJ, still to this day, every time I hear it, I think of the 06 playoffs at the Brock Street Hotel in Ottawa. We have a team meeting. I have a Motorola flip phone right in my pocket. And all of a sudden, I'm like, here's me over the line. That was my ringtone. Hey, screw it. And then I'm like trying to hide it so Lindy doesn't get mad and say, who's got their phones on here? And so that not only does it give me the goosebumps listening to it, it scared the crap out of me in a team meeting because that was my ringtone.
It is. I know RJ had all the best calls, but it is, to me, by far and away, the greatest one of all time.
Yeah.
Kyle Brandt from NFL Network is coming up on One Bills Live.
Angry run, baby!